tell me how wealthy in the 1920s the Osages were. And I think the whites were jealous because these people were buying not only one new car, two cars, three cars. They were living in the lap of luxury because they were living on an income far greater than the rest of the
world. My grandmother, I've mentioned a couple times, and my grandpa, they had a house east of Pawhuska, red brick house, and it had a mahogany phone booth in it. And then in the basement, it was the heat, central heat, was also able to convert to central air. And they had a servant, they called him in those days. He wasn't black, but they had a servant. And he would take blocks of ice during the summer and put it in this device where they would have central air. And she had several cars, like all the other Osages. She had a blue Duesenberg, which is pretty cool.
Okay, is this your grandma?
This is my grandma. Yeah, she had a blue Duesenberg. Remember 1922, she was like 24.
And she had the headrights.
She had headrights.
And how much money was she getting?
Well, at the time, let's see, what's the top year, the equivalent of every man, woman, and child at the time that had a headright. That means you had to receive it at 1906 or 1907. There was a supplemental rule. $400,000 in today's dollars. And she had a couple of those. So
that's nearly a million.
Tax-free. And so, I said, well, so what other cars do you have? She goes, well, my favorite car was my Buick Roadster. And then my grandpa, Gene, he told me, he goes, yeah, me and your uncles, we had biplanes. And we get up there, over there on the, in that field over there, and we just keep our planes there. Your one, I'm not going to mention any names, but he goes, your one uncle didn't drink, but he sure liked to fly. He goes, but my grandpa Gene goes, I just always talk about a bottle of whiskey with me, and I'd get into that plane. And we go up and fly up to Kansas, 30 miles north of here, and have dogfights. This during the 1920s. These guys were in their 20s. That's the world they were living in, according to my, that's what I was told.
But then your families, were they nervous?
Well, yeah.
That they could be attacked, assassinated.
I asked that question, actually, about, I'd heard about this stuff. I said, did we ever, we lose anybody? I said, no, my dad and I were going down the road and somebody took a shot through the front window, but we don't know if it was reckless hunting or somebody, because no one chased him or anything, but it made him nervous enough. She tells me he hired some bodyguards, basically, out of Chicago, brought them down. He was chief at the time. He was off and on chief during those decades. And
again, who?
Fred Lookout.
Your?
Great-grandfather.
Right.
Yeah, he hired some guys out of Chicago. She said, one of them said, it was at the house, east of town, said, Chief, once these guys around here find out me and my boys are hired by you to protect your family, you're in no trouble. And my great-grandfather hired some very tough outlaws of those gangsters, basically. We never had any problems.
No. All this money, you talked $400,000, then you got another allotment of $400,000 in today's money.
That's what they tell us. The adjusted is $400,000.
Right. Did any of that money, was it all spent? Did it get carried down to next generation?
Well, it did not. For the most part, some did, some didn't. But again, these people did not have financial literacy training. People would, this is documented, buy a new car, top of the line, Pierce Arrow or something and drive it, and it ran out of gas. They thought it was just dead horse, and they would go buy another vehicle. And someone else would just take that vehicle and go away with it.
Hmm.
I mean, that was documented. It wasn't anything that my family or others, any other Osage I know, knew about. But I can tell you, when you go to the Gray Horse Cemetery or some of these other cemeteries, Hominy, Pawhuska, look how many young people whose grave markers show deceased, 1920, 1921, 1919, 1923, 1925. Look at the ages of these people. And again, like that, I can't mention her name. I almost mentioned her name. I don't want to. Like she said, my family should have been large like yours. Mm-hmm. That is what you'll see in these graveyards.
Yeah. I don't know, in the book, was it like they documented about 28 people were murdered, but there were many, many
Oh,
more.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
many.
We've amongst ourselves here, some of the leadership over the years, and talking to some who descended from those folks over there, best estimate we can make is 5% of our tribe was assassinated.
So how many would that be?
About 150.
Yeah.
Yeah, murdered. Which, you know, doesn't sound like a lot, but if that's your crew and you're targeted and 5% are being knocked off and the system is helping it. Some say, and a former tribal leader, tribe chief, has told me me and my people that come up with that number, I've never really promoted that number, are grossly underestimating the amount.
Hmm.
But, you know, his family's from Gray Horse, so I think more of it was there, Hominy. But here in Pawhuska, it happened. There's a book called Deaths of Sybil Bolton about this guy's grandma. She lived right up the street here. She's one of those victims. It happened, but I think most of it was in the Gray Horse District. So when you take those folks and then take out the numbers, it's probably more impactful.